Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah with a few announcements. Thanks to everyone who came to Campers Christmas. What a wonderful show for an incredible cause. It's not too late to donate to the Say It Loud Club if you couldn't come. One more show before Christmas, King's Place, 2 episodes on Wednesday, the 14th of December. Back with a bang in the new year with 4 shows at Soho Theatre. On Wednesday, the 4th of January, we're having a very special town hall where we try and solve a problem together and you can come up and take the mic. On Thursday, the 5th of January, we're having a special. Shapi Kosandi and I are co-hosting a special about the terrible situation in Iran. And on Friday, the 6th of January and Saturday, the 7th of January, guests to be announced. Thursday, the 26th of January, we are back at King's Place. Sunday, 29th of January, we're at the Rose Theatre in Kingston. For more details and to book, go to guiltyfeminist.com. Join our Patreon to support the show and get ad-free episodes and more besides. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you don't mind. And now, back to the show. Hello, Auckland! Are you ready for a little bit more Guilty Feminists? Yeah. Then please welcome back to the stage Deborah Frances White and Cal Wilson. Yeah. Hello, Cal Wilson. Oh, hello, Cal.
Hello, Deborah Frances White.
Can I just ask you, Cal?
Yes.
Have you had any brushes with the law? Because that's relevant to our guest tonight. So I just want to have a little chat about feminism and the law. So we're just going to start with Cal Wilson and the law first.
All right.
Have you had any brushes?
More of a comb, I would say.
A comb with the law? Okay.
But it was a good one.
Tell me more,
so
tell me more.
So what happened was, this happened when my son was 2.
Yes.
And he was in the car seat in the back and I was driving. I didn't need to clarify that because that's what we'd assumed, that he wasn't in the front sitting on some phone books while I was like, do what you like, darling. So we are driving through the roundabout at the local shopping centre.
Yes.
And I have decided that I want to turn left from the right-hand lane, which you can't do, but I was going to give it a crack. And as I went to turn illegally, this red station wagon cut me off. And this is not what I expected myself, but I tooted at him and screamed, fuck you, and gave him the fingers.
Carl Wilson.
And he put his sirens on.
Oh!
And I had just done that to an undercover cop.
No.
And
Carl.
So what happened was I pulled over and he opened the passenger door and I burst into tears and went, I'm so sorry, I'm just a mum.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And I was crying so much. Like, I was, because I was mortified. I was like, geez, like, I'm such a goody two-shoes. And I absolutely just flipped off a policeman and told him to get fucked. And I just, I cried so violently that he backed out of the door going, you're all right, you're all right, you're all right.
Oh, wow.
And then he went back to check the license and everything in his car. And Digby was like, well, this is a fascinating Tuesday. Like this little boy.
And he was two.
He was two. And I was like, oh, I did something wrong. And and he was intrigued as to why I was suddenly crying. And I was like, oh, you know, I did the wrong thing. And the cop came back and gave me a warning. And he should not have given me a warning. Like, I still feel like I should send him some money. Like, I definitely should have received
if
a fine for that.
You send money to a police officer for letting you off a crime, that is what we call corruption. You must not do that.
I'm learning all the time, Deborah. So he lets me off with a warning, which I absolutely deserved to get points off my license for that. But he let me off, and I thought I had got away with it, that we didn't need to mention it to Dad. Digby didn't need to mention that to Dad. Like, it wasn't a secret. It was, you know, secrets are only for birthdays. So I was like, let's call it a happy surprise. So I thought I got away with it. But because it was a roundabout we drove through every day for about 6 months, as we drove through the roundabout, just from the back seat you'd hear, Mummy was bad.
Did he ever do that with your husband in the car?
I ended up telling him and he was like, oh my God, you've turned into a bogan. I'm so proud of you. What about you, Deborah? What are your brushes with the law?
Okay, once I was in America and I was driving a manual car, which legally I was allowed to do, but ethically more dubious. Because I got my license in Queensland, and in Queensland you can get a license that's either automatic or manual, or if you're listening in America, a stick shift. And I could not drive a stick shift, I could only drive an automatic. So my license said automatic, but when I moved to New South Wales, they only have one sort of license there, or certainly did at that time. So it just got upgraded automatically to a manual license. So when I moved to America, I was given the loan of this car for a while, and I thought, well, I'm just going to have to learn how to drive a stick shift while on the road with my full license saying I could. And I was just pootling around in Connecticut. Like, but it was...
You're saying pootle, but I'm visualising bunny hops. Like, I'm...
Yeah, and one night I was, you know, I was sticking and I was running, you know... And
you
I
were
felt
you were
this,
sticking.
The, you know, I was the, I was stalling. It was sticking. You know. Anyway,
the description of sticking, like you're just stirring something in a pot, like that's how the gearbox works.
And it was really late at night, and suddenly I felt this car on my tail, and I was really nervous. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to stall and blah blah blah. And then I was thinking, there's a guy behind me, and he's going to jump out, and I was really scared. And then put his siren on, and I thought, oh my God. And he jumped out of the car and came around and said, are you aware you're on the wrong side of the road? And I was like, oh, am I? Where I come from, this is the right side of the road. Mary Poppins. And he said, a spoonful of sugar or something that, you know, police officers say to white women. I will say that that is such white privilege. That is such white privilege. One night, my friend and I, and this is, to be fair, we weren't doing anything wrong, but we were in Melbourne.
I thought you were going to say, we weren't doing anything wrong, but we were in balaclavas. And
she drove me to my friend's house. My friend was away and had said I could stay there and had left me a key. And we really old friends. We hadn't caught up in years. And she drove me back. And you know how sometimes you sit in the driveway and you just chat because you can't, you know. So we sat in the driveway for probably what was an hour or something of this friend's house. And this friend is both famous and away. And the neighbors must have seen us sitting there thinking we were breaking in or something. And so the neighbors who hadn't known that I was going to stay there obviously called the police. And the police, a police officer came up, wound down the window and said, do you live here? And we said, no. And he said, so why are you here? And I said, well, I'm staying here. This is my friend's house. And he said to my friend, do you have any ID to say that you own this car? And she went, he said, what's your name? And she said, and he said, who's it registered to? And she said, he said, it's not registered to your name. She said, no, it's my husband. My husband has a clown company. Which, I mean, it's true, but it does sound dodgy.
Did you say cloud or clown?
Clown company.
Clown company. Yeah.
Her husband owned a clowning company. And so when she'd said her name...
Please tell me that they told you to step out of the car and there were like 40 of you that just came out.
The wheels fell off at that point and we had to put them all back on but stay happy about it. So she had first had said her name and had sort of forgotten that the car, I think, was in the clowning company name. So he said, that's not correct.
What did the car look like? Like, was it like an adorably tiny car?
It was just a regular car, but when you blew the horn, it was a squirty flower. And it had really big tyres, red tyres. No, it didn't. Anyway, she, I think, had forgotten at first, so said her name and said her address. And he said, that's not correct. And she went, oh, no, actually, this car is registered to another address because that's the address.
It's registered to Mr. Honkdoodle.
Yeah, basically. And he was like, have you got any proof that this is your car? Or have you got any proof that you're allowed to be in this house? We said no on both those counts. And he said, well, I'm satisfied. And just went. And I just looked at her and just went, white privilege is a thing. I'm sorry, but can you imagine if we were two Indigenous women sitting in somebody else's driveway and couldn't prove a fucking thing? Do you think they would have left us there? We would have gone to the station. And you just inherently know that that's true, whoever you are. And so when people say white privilege isn't a thing, and you know, and I will say, because I think I need to be always strictly fair about this, I don't know that two white men would have got off. I think that white women are the least criminalized human beings in the world. I think if we just go, I'm sorry, Mr. Policeman.
No, we go, I'm just a mum.
I know. White lady tears. It's not true. And I always say that the best mule in the world is a white woman who doesn't know she's carrying.
Is that why I get stopped every single time?
No, because if you did have something on you, you could honestly say, if you had drugs in your pocket, you go, oh, I bought this jacket at Oxfam. I don't know. I didn't ever know that was in there. I don't even know what it is. Is it baking powder? You could get away with that, Cal. You'd go, I'm just a mum.
This is my cooking jacket, and that's... that's my baking soda pocket. That's my baking powder pocket. Yeah.
So two things about that. If you are a white woman, acknowledge that you're in certain situations you will be criminalized less than even white men and understand the power of your, you know, and just know that and never, ever, ever misuse it. And in other situations, come the glorious revolution / as we need to take on fascism, do use it. If these things are, you know, you can see what's happening in America now with Roe versus Wade. You can feel there's an energy around the world. You know, there's pulling up borders. I know New Zealand is a much better country than many. But, you know, there's a thermometer, there's a global thermometer. And sometimes New Zealanders, you know, you may be called upon to help in certain situations. In which case, if you're on the side of the angels, you use that white woman privilege. And you make that face and you do what you need to do.
So,
if you're doing it for the right reasons, I would say, don't do it for yourself to get out of parking tickets. Don't do it. Don't do that. It's not cool.
But the roundabout thing is still cool, though. I can still...
You have expressed remorse to me every time I've met you in the years that I've known you for that incident in a way that...
Just that one story over and over again backstage. She's the only one I tell.
The guilt, the self-flagellation you've had. No, I'm just saying, you know, we just need to know, you know, like any privilege, if you can use it for good. I'm not suggesting, I'm not here telling you to break the law, but I am saying if you see an opportunity to stand... Did you see any of the... There were, during Black Lives Matter, I saw imagery of, like, white women, for example, getting between black people and police officers and sort of using their bodies as, you're not going to hurt me, you're not going to touch me, you know, sort of way of innocence. And that doesn't always work, you know. There was the Met Police in London did throw white women to the ground, and, you know, that... I'm not saying it, that always works, or white women are never criminalised. Working class white women are, certain white women are. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. I can't caveat it in every single direction. We'll be here all night. But I am saying privilege is always something to be used to work on behalf of others who are more marginalised. But not to get you driving on the wrong side of the road in America, which I accidentally did. But he did feel sorry for me. I was very young and I looked pathetic. I'd like to say I never drove on the wrong side of the road after that, but we all know that's not true. Is it time to get our guest on?
I think so.
Our guest today, I'm very excited about her, is a New Zealand and Harvard-educated lawyer and is now one of New Zealand's top public and constitutional law experts specialising in central and local government. She has been senior partner of her firm, Chen Palmer, for more than... What's that noise?
I believe it was murmurs of recognition, Deborah.
For more than 20 years, holding countless governance and advisor roles... She works to empower women, champion diversity, and inspire leaders across New Zealand. She's now a professor at the University of Auckland. Just give me a cheer if you're at the University of Auckland or have been. In between chairing New Zealand Global Women and New Zealand Asian Leaders, among many other leadership roles, she's also been a finalist twice at the New Zealand of the Year Awards. Please welcome to the stage, Mai Chen! Take a seat. They're fans. Mai Chen, they love you already.
No, they don't. They love you, Deborah.
No. And
can I just say, you've made me look so good. Because, like, my staff were looking at my calendar and said to me, why are you doing that? And I said, well, I just wanted to impress my son.
Oh.
He said, Mum, you're going to get a gig?
Oh. Well, is your son in tonight?
He is. Jack, darling, if you're out there.
Jack, darling.
Oh, it sounds like there are lots of him.
Yes.
Now, listen, Mai Chen, I'm so excited to talk to you. Because you have recently changed the law, the process of how the law is delivered, really. I suppose all the considerations that are made when the law is executed. Is that
correct?
Well,
it's really kind of you. But, I'm just the handmaiden. Look, what happened was about 10 years ago, I left Wellington. Now, that's a hard thing for a constitutional lawyer to do. But I came to Auckland. And the reason is because... the demography of New Zealand is changing. If I said to the audience out there, put your hand up if you weren't born in this country. Put your hand up if there's somebody, if your mum and dad weren't born in this country.
Can you do a cheering noise because it's a podcast? And also,
dark. Okay, we need noises.
Okay, so noise if you and or your parents were not born in this country.
Or
sorry, everyone now.
Or if someone in your family and extended family were not born in New Zealand. Okay, I have my proof. So
yes.
All I'm saying to you is that we have been going on a stereotype. Now, Deborah, that's what this show's all about, right? So the stereotype used to be that we were all of one gender. We've now figured out that we have more than one gender. There are many genders. And then we figured out now all I'm trying to do is make people realise that we're not all the same ethnicity. Okay? And in Auckland, in Tamaki Makaurau in particular, 50% of the population is already tangata whenua, Pacifica. This is the biggest Pacifica city in the world, and one in three people in this town is Asian. Woo! Okay.
So there are many Indigenous people in Auckland, there are many Asian people in Auckland, and how does that affect how the law is executed?
Because it provides a cultural and social context. Look, we have a lot of people turning up in court. They don't speak English. In fact, in the last census in 2018, it found we now have more people not speaking English than we had in the census prior to that. Now, this is not bad English. This is not a little bit of English. This is no English. So they go to court. They are having a fight with somebody else who also doesn't speak English. And they're trying to represent themselves. And the judge is none the wiser. Mm. So actually, taking into account people's culture and language is huge because it affects the way they behave. Because courts are all about what did you do and why did you do it? And how can you understand what people did or why they did it if you don't understand their cultural background?
And do they not automatically have the right to an interpreter?
No.
What?
Not in civil litigation. Oh. So they do in criminal, but even in criminal cases, it's not like there are no qualifications required to be an interpreter. And the last time they had a pay increase for interpreters was 1993. So as my son would say, Mum, was that like last century? Yes. So the thing is, you could be a cab driver and be an interpreter. They don't. And also, as you know, where you come from has a real impact on your accuracy of interpretation. Mm. So if you come from rural China and you are trying to interpret Mandarin from someone who was born in Singapore, because, you know, not all Chinese are the same. It's like, you know, there's no such thing as Maori. They come from different iwi. They come from different hapu and groupings and whānau. It's the same. So if you don't get somebody who understands your slang, your lingo, they'll interpret it wrong. Mm. I was in a case where I was representing a person. It was the first offended anti-money laundering prosecution. And I got an interpreter who I thought knew what they were doing. This was a civil case, so my client had to pay for it. So the question was put, did you do it really? And my client said no. The interpreter didn't interpret it. It just happens to be that I speak Mandarin. So I said, I'm really sorry, Your Honour, I have to interrupt this. But the question was put to my client. My client answered it, and it wasn't interpreted. So the judge was good enough to say, well, thank you, Ms. Chen, and then said to the interpreter, could you put the question again? You see, all of these things matter, and in criminal law it matters too, because if you're trying to figure out whether someone is really sorry and therefore should get a commuted sentence, you know, I mean, if you come from a Chinese culture, there's a whole concept of big face.
So what's big face?
What's big face?
Okay, big face means that you don't want to bring... Yeah, you just were like the Topsy twins there. It was lovely. It's lovely, though. It's kind of like, I think you've been married too long.
It's like an impro game, yeah, like speaking my voice.
You're starting to finish each other's sentences.
Yeah, it's getting concerning.
So what that means is that you get a commuted sentence if you are really sorry, you showed contrition. But of course, if you come from a country where there is a concept of honour, you think that you've done something wrong, but that if you show that you have or that you acknowledge you have, then you bring disrepute on your family. That may be why you show no remorse. Mm. Well, you show no remorse, then, buddy, you're going down, and you're going down to prison for a long time. So, therefore, it is really important for there to be a culture report so that judges understand.
So things code differently in different cultures.
They do.
So what looks like remorse to a white Westerner, and we would just read it that way, and we'd go, oh, that person's sorry, will not read that way in a different country.
Perfect.
That could read as something completely different.
Perfect. So So I intervened in a case. It's called Zing and Ding. It's really exciting. As all law is, it's about whether or not what the two parties were engaged in was a partnership. You asked me what Jack wants to do for a living. I tried to interest him in law. All I got was, well Mum, why would I want to work as hard as you? He would like to be an actor.
Jack.
Anyway,
run fast from show business. Run far away.
So anyway, I went to court and I said to them, look, there's lots of these cases and there's going to be more of them. Yeah. And in fact, do you know there are now 9% of the legal profession are now Asian lawyers? So, you know, if you put the Asian lawyers together with the Pacific lawyers and the Maori lawyers, you know, we're 30%. Anyway, look, the court was great. It brought down a whole pile of guidance about ensuring that when it's relevant, a social and cultural context is put around the evidence so that there's a proper interpretation of what people did and what they intended. And that's important because without that, you will have miscarriages of justice, okay? So it really matters.
This is amazing what you've done.
It's
so important and so important. And I know this is true for refugees that I know who speak English, but they're entitled to an interpreter. So they think, I might as well have it because, you know, there might be something in legalese that I'd better have an interpreter because although my English is good, you know, it's not necessarily legal. And I've had friends say the interpreter has completely not interpreted what I've said.
Yeah, that's right.
Because my English is really good and my Arabic is very is native. And I'm like, yeah. No, that's not quite right. And or it's not what they've said. So they've said something in English. It's been interpreted back to me.
Yeah.
And they've said, if I didn't speak excellent English, I wouldn't have known what they were driving at. So I wouldn't have given them what the evidence they wanted that I should be allowed to say.
So just think about this. You're already under supreme stress. You're in court. And then you've got somebody else who has to interpret what it is you say. Mm-hmm. So you're not representing yourself. You've got an interpreter. And if the interpreter doesn't get it right, then you are prejudiced because everything depends on the evidence. So I have to tell you that if you don't speak English and you are in our courts, it's just so much more difficult. Mm-hmm. Also, if you end up having to get expert evidence because you come from a different culture and you speak a different language, it's just much more expensive. So look, this is all about equal access to the law and ensuring that justice is done. And the fact that the courts now recognise that that's important is huge.
Yeah, really huge.
Really huge, yeah.
That's incredible that's what you've done.
No, I hope countries
around the world that have these similar problems see New Zealand and see what you've done and go, right, we've got to enact that. I mean,
did it take you a long time to... Like, have you been talking about this for years and years, or is this...
I just sometimes I feel like Moses in the wilderness. I came up to Auckland 10 years ago, and no one understood why. So in the end, the explanation I gave was, well, I came up to Auckland so I could come out as a Chinese person. because actually, the rest of New Zealand is not as diverse. But actually, up here, we're a dime a dozen. And in fact, it was so bad when we first got up here that my husband freaked out because he is British. He's a British migrant. And of course, the way that he has managed to find me in a crowd is always to look for a dark head, right? But when we first got to Auckland, he panicked and he said, oh my God, he said, I lost you. And I turned around and they all had dark heads and I didn't know which one was you. So it was quite funny.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Do you find, as an Asian woman in law, that sometimes certain stereotypes are projected onto you?
I have found it difficult. There's no doubt that if you're tall and you have a very deep voice, that you and you be, you know, you are male, sometimes that there is a feeling that you do get an easier time in court. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I have appeared in court and I've had a colleague on the other side, and it's male, and he's older and he's got lovely grey hair and he's been to similar schools to perhaps some of the judges, and they're having a wonderful time. Oh, yes, you know, Your Honour. There's a lovely banter going on, and then I try and get up and it's kind of like, no, Ms Chen, we don't want to hear from you. Sometimes it is a bit difficult, yes.
I've found in the past, and I'm white, so obviously I don't have that extra layer of assumption, but sometimes when you do a corporate gig, or when I do a corporate gig, or I've done a stand-up gig, there's lots of stuff I have to get through before I can actually do my job. Mm. So I've got to reassure the audience that, yes, I'm also aware that I'm a woman. And I also know that I'm on stage and it is stand-up comedy. And I have to assure them that it's going to be all right and we'll probably all survive. Yeah. And then once I've calmed everybody down, then I can get on with... Mm. Like, do you find that you kind of got to...
The difficulty that I've got is just fighting the stereotype. And the further you are away from stereotype, the more people rebel against it. Mm. So the thing is that when I come on stage, they think, okay, instantly they think self-effacing, not leadership material, probably very introverted, very shy, doesn't like speaking out, very good at maths. Really, really not true, guys. Really, really not true. Bad driver, really, really true. Really, really true. God, I've got the most banged up Lexus in the world. All the tyres are scraped. And
is that a pressure if people say you're a bad driver and then you think, well, I coincidentally am a bad driver, but like now I have to prove that I'm not, so as not to endorse a stereotype?
Okay, the worst thing is when people toot at me and shout at me. It's really difficult being the subject of stereotyping. Mm. You know, some people say to me, oh, May, you should stop talking about discrimination. You should just get over it. You know, everybody knows who you are now and you've made it. Yeah, I'm sorry, I wake up and I still look like this every morning. I look in the mirror and I think, oh, there she is again. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, all I want to do... I'd love to get to the stage where we never talk about gender and we never talk about race. I just love it because we all, you know, we all have an identity. And this thing where people now have to say, oh no, I'm really sorry, I'm just a white male. You know, I'm sorry. It just would be great if all of us could just be proud of who we are. And that, you know, and that we don't have to spend our lives wishing we were somebody else. That's all.
I completely hear you, and I feel very similarly to you, Cal, that sometimes I come out onto the stage in a comedy club and I see people in the front row say, I don't find women funny, I don't like female comedians, I'm going to the bar, like, and you have to spend that first 5 minutes of the set proving that you're as funny as any of the guys, so that then they, and it is constantly exhausting, but there's no stakes on our, like, if we have a bad gig, no one goes to jail. Do you know what I mean? Like, in a way... I imagine the pressure of that.
Can I tell you the worst thing?
Yeah.
The worst thing is when people think that if they got a tall white male to represent them, they would get a better outcome in court because they might get more respect from the judiciary. Now, look, the judiciary is changing. We have an amazing Chief Justice, the Right Honourable Dame Helen Wynne-Kalman. She's doing amazing things. She's transforming the judiciary. She thinks diversity in the judiciary is important. So, look, it's changing, but it makes me really sad that a person would not treat you on the basis of merit. You know, I went to an Ed Sheeran concert in Amsterdam last Friday night, like you do, right? 70,000 people.
I thought this was going to go.
Okay. I'm not big noting. Okay, all I'm trying to say to you is I love the fact that Ed Sheeran, you know, is not physically hugely attractive. He's just an ordinary guy, okay? This is, like, he's not super, super gorgeous, and yet he's there because he is the best songwriter in the world. I am there in the face of greatness, and, you know, all I want is to be treated on the basis of merit. I don't want people to say... oh my God, you know what people say to me sometimes? They say, you look so much shorter than on television. And I think, what? What? You know, it's just like, does it matter? I mean, isn't it my big brain that you're paying for? Anyway.
So the sentence that I'm taking away from that, May, is you just want to be treated like Ed Sheeran.
Yes!
I want to be Ed Sheeran, man. And you know the best thing about his concert? He was totally in the flow. Like, I've seen you tonight. I mean, you are so good at what you do. And can I say, I've been so inspired. And I'll tell you what the inspiration is. You said some great things. You've been hilariously funny. But I'll tell you what I've mainly got out of tonight. It's your total confidence. You are totally in command.
Babe, that's
this
so lovely.
This is your gig.
Well, that's extremely kind of you. And I am much bolstered by this audience. And what's interesting about it is, I think, exactly what we were saying before about when you go to a comedy club audience and they don't know who you are and they like go, oh, we don't like women. You can feel like you have to fight for your confidence. Mm. And the wonderful thing about the Guilty Feminist audiences is before we've even hit the stage, you know, the cheering begins. And it's really, it's sort of feminism in action, because it's really hard for any human being not to be confident when an audience treats them like a rock star. And so if I say, oh my God, there's a shepherd in the audience, we want to see her, and then she comes out and everyone screams for her, she jumps up on the stage like it's her stage. You know what I mean? And it's, you have to understand the power of yourself on each other, how much we set the tone for each other.
Yeah, but you created this safe space.
Well, it's
you
a
created
circular.
This safe space it's for these people to come, and that's why they talk to you. I mean, I've never seen that level of audience participation. Usually when you ask for audience participation, no one says anything. Or is that because I'm a professor and the students don't like being cold called? All I'm saying is these people love you and they feel
thank
safe
you, mate.
With you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, and thank you, Auckland, for being so incredible. And I know I'm always better when I'm with Cal as well. Cal makes me funnier. And she does. She does make me funnier because I find Cal so funny and Cal finds me funny. This is sometimes a chemistry. And I always love coming to Auckland and I always love coming to New Zealand. And I... Aotearoa. I learned how to say it last night properly. Is that better? Aotearoa?
Aotearoa. Aotearoa.
Aotearoa. Is that anywhere near it? They're giving me an encouraging clap, but it
just
wasn't the endorse.
Just say yes, or she's going to say it again and again and again and again.
It's what happened last night. But no, I remember I got really good at it last night.
You did.
I've lost it again.
Then you doubt yourself and then it goes away again.
I don't know why I've brought it back. I should never have tried. But listen, no, that is true. I think people don't know how much they can affect the energy of a room. And anybody at any level can be a leader. If you could be an intern, but if you're on that Zoom call or you're in that room and you bring an energy, you know when a conference call or a meeting, everybody's getting like this and they're sort of like, well, you're across this, Dave. Would you get us across this? Yeah, I could get you across this. And it's going like that. And I've actually heard people fall asleep on conference calls before. And if one of you could be an intern, could be the first year, you know, first year graduate, whatever, goes, oh, Dave, that's really interesting. Could you unpack that a bit more? Dave, it's physically impossible for Dave to go, yeah, all right. He will go, oh, I'm interesting. And anyone can lift that energy. And it was like tonight, Anita, I was asking who's got a story or something, and Anita was pointing at a person in front of her was called Claire. And I said, I thought they must be friends. And she was like, no, we don't know each other. But she's just sort of endorsing a sister. And I think there's something so powerful about that. And if we can do that more and build each other up, rather than sit on Twitter waiting for someone to make an error, it's, you know, like, I just think that's the way forward. And I think, May, that's what you're doing. Because what you're doing is you're saying, hey, people are not being looked after in this system because assumptions are being made about them. And I'm going to rid this system of the assumptions.
The most important thing in life is that you need to figure out what you think needs to be done and you just need to go and do it.
100%.
Everyone thought I was mad, but they don't think I'm mad now.
She's great.
Because the Supreme Court said it. You know, not me, not me. It was them. 10 years, though. I have to tell you, I cried.
Oh.
I did. I cried. When the judgment came out, I cried because I understood what it meant. When they talked about social and cultural framework, I thought, that's the super diversity framework I've been talking about for the last 10 years.
It's amazing.
So May, what is next? What's what are you going to do for the next 10 years and change the world with?
Well, actually, it's really important because life is mainly about what you're not going to do. Okay, but this work is important. You know how life is.
Yeah.
You try some things, the door slams. You try some things, the door opens. Okay, well, this is important. So basically, we're working now towards a symposium in the Sorbonne. Is that because it's the symposium on culture and the law? Yes, it's really important, but it's also in the Sorbonne. So, look, there's a lot of work to be done in this area because if we're going to ensure that New Zealand courts are adapted to providing access to justice regardless of culture, language and religion, then we just have to keep working on this because we've only just started. Yeah.
I have so much faith in you for the next 10 years. May, is there anything you came to say that you didn't get to say? Anything you need our help with? Anything you need endorsing, validating? Anything you need to write them to write to their MPs about? Or just anything else you'd like to tell us about?
The Super Diversity Institute is something I set up with my own money probably about 7 years ago. If you want to go and look at our reports, please do. What it does is it puts a super diversity framework around certain areas of business, life, community and the law. So, for example, even with health and safety, there's a huge cultural component. If you come from a country with low health and safety, then how are you going to comply with the laws in New Zealand? It's pretty important, though, because if you don't, you'll probably die or get injured. So, yeah, it's really funny. It's hilarious. Okay, I think the audience is, it'd be really good if you could just look at the stuff and talk about super diversity and talk about culture. Hey, gender's important, but, you know, there's a lot of women here who are doing gender plus. It's gender and race, gender and sexuality, gender plus. So, you know, so a lot of people sometimes say, the white chicks have got on the board. What's the problem with you guys? Look, it's just a little harder, okay? We're not the candidate from Casting Central. People look at us and we look foreign. I've just joined the Blue Sky Meats board. It's lovely. It's about lamb and we do kill a few of them. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry.
Not. You made that sound like it happened at board meetings.
Yeah, well... Actually, it was so funny because, you know, when I joined the board, I said, no, you need to take me down. I want to be on the killing room floor. And they said, are you sure? And I said, well, we sell the stuff. I need to know what happens to it. I must say, you know, I do love my vegetables after that. It was quite an experience. But all I'm saying is that, you know, I'm coming up to the annual general meeting. It's in Southland. It's right down south. The South is quite conservative. All I'm saying is I'm not the candidate from Casting Central. Wouldn't it be wonderful if somebody like me was the candidate from Casting Central sometime in the not-too-distant future?
Cal, anything to plug? Anything you'd like these guys to know about?
I just like to say, when you were asking May before whether she had anything that she wanted to say to you, and I was waiting for you to go, and does Jack have any chores that he needs to do? but on my behalf, follow me. I've got onto TikTok, and it was supposed to be about comedy, but it's just me talking to my cats on the coffee machine like they're baristas. So support me there. If you're not on TikTok, you're leading a full, rewarding life, and you... You don't need to go there. Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, but it's a hot... Twitter used to be a village that you curated yourself, you know, and you invited all the neighbours in, and then somehow the zombies broke in and ate everybody. So I'm not on Twitter really much anymore, is what I'm saying. Buy my kids' books, George and the Great Bum Stampede, George and the Great Brain Swappery. If you keep buying them, they might ask me to write another one. And I'll have to think up another body part.
And if you could... do us a favour and rate, review and subscribe to the podcast and give it 5 stars. That would really help. And also there are 300 episodes. If you don't know this show and you've been brought by someone, is this their first time? You're pointing at somebody there like it's a, yeah, absolutely. Have you enjoyed it?
It's been amazing, yeah.
Great. Well, there's 300 episodes for you to listen to now. I don't wish to assume your gender. Are you a man?
Yes, yeah.
Are you a feminist?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't applaud yet.
There's going to be an exam.
How would we know you were a feminist if you didn't tell us?
Maybe my friend's endorsement.
My friend's endorsement. You're going to get a woman to say it for you. I see. There's some things you can get involved in here. Get involved. Thank you so much for coming. One thing you could do, you could buy my book. It's called The Guilty Feminist. The podcasts are free. The book isn't. Buy it. You've been a really wonderful audience. Can you just join me in giving a big thank you to everyone at the Bruce Mason Centre? Our tour manager, Michael, and everyone at Bone. The incredible Cal Wilson. Mei Chen, come on! You've honestly been one of my favourite guests, not just of the tour, but of this year. She's just one of my favourite guests, one of my favourite people. What a phenomenon. What a phenomenon. Also, could we have a big round of applause? We saw her in Act One. Now at final. Keep that going for the incredible Grace Petrie.
Auckland! How are you doing? I fucking love Auckland. I genuinely do love Auckland. I don't just say that to all the cities. I do. This is my second time here. I came here for the first time in 2020. And I discovered that you have a lesbian museum. And that would have been enough to cement your place in my heart. But last time we did a show here in Auckland, me and Deb went to a gay bar in town and we walked in and the person behind the bar said, "Your money's no good here. Your drinks are on the house," right? That's never happened to me anywhere else. Not my own hometown. So basically, I'm planning to move if you'll have me. I love it. I'm gonna sing you a couple of songs. Crikey. You're up for the cup, aren't you, tonight in Auckland? Yes. Cool. So, yeah, the first song I'm going to sing you is... this is a song about... this is a song about being dumped, right? So it's all right. It's okay. I was fine. It's a bit late now. Do you know what I mean? let's try it again. This is a song about getting dumped. Thanks, Auckland. I feel like I fished for it, but I'll take it anyway. No, it's fine. Basically, a few years ago, what happened is that I was seeing somebody and it just didn't work out. It's just one of these things. Just didn't work out and I didn't really understand why, you know. I was sort of obsessing about it loads, trying to work out what happened. And I was kind of thinking about it loads with my friends. And I was sort of talking about it loads with my friends. And I was kind of analysing it with my friends. And then I realised after a few weeks of this that my friends just didn't find this as fascinating as I did. I'm very lucky. I've got two little nieces, and around about the time that this was going on, they were very into the film Frozen. You know, the Disney movie Frozen. Give me a shout if you've seen Frozen. Of course. I mean, it's a feminist text, you know. And so around about the time I was trying to get over this person, I was watching a lot of Frozen with my nieces, and nestled within the script of Frozen, I found the wisdom that I needed to move on. So I wrote this song about it, and it's called Princess Elsa Blues. And I guess it's... Last night in the pub, I realised I was being tolerated, not enjoyed. I saw it there reflected in friends' eyes. I've become the kind of person I avoid. Well, I woke up feeling rough and wondering when my needle got stuck on a groove called you. And as I reached for Alka-Seltzer, the wisdom of Elsa came to me, and now I know what I must do. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go. Now epiphanies can come from anywhere, from the sunrise or the verses of Shakespeare. But it wasn't Sylvia Plath or Nietzsche that turned out to be my teacher. It was Disney had the words I had to hear. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. And all those times I just wouldn't be told. Well, now I finally broke out this chokehold. And all the times you were cold never bothered me anyway. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go. I just need to let it go. I just need to let it go.
Thank you very much. Grace Petrie, everybody!
Auckland, you've been a truly amazing audience. I do feel very, very happy tonight. You know, it's easy when you're on tour for each show to feel similar. And I feel really moved tonight. I feel really, like, I just thought you were such an amazing guest. And I felt really moved by a poet. And it's just been a wonderful night. And you've just been so on board right from the beginning in a way that has been truly wonderful. And I just want to say my birth mother's in the audience tonight, so thank you for inventing me. Without you, there is no me, and I'm made of you, so thank you so much for that. That was really nice of you. And also, my sister Emma is in tonight, and she's a wonderful feminist, and she's an educator. And so I just want to say a big shout out. Is anyone else in that I'm related to? Do you know what? I'll come back out after the last bit, which is just going to happen now, and I'll stand at the front there, and you can bring your book there, and I'll come out and do that. I don't think I'm allowed to do a big foyer thing anymore because of COVID at the moment.
Oh, come on!
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not even today.
It's. I think.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, Auckland.
If anyone has a spontaneous present for Grace, please come and leave it down the front of the stage. Just take, I mean, you might not have brought anything she wouldn't have known, but, you know, take off an item of clothing or something. Just
we're really making too much of the fact that it's my birthday tomorrow.
We couldn't possibly make too much of that, Grace. So. Yeah. No, no, you don't need to give that to Grace. She's got a copy.
I've got her book.
She hasn't read the four copies I've already given her. So, you know. What was that?
That's the perfect present.
She's got a what DVD?
A Top Twins DVD.
I don't know what that is. If you want to come and bring that down as an offering, then she'd love that. I don't know what it is, but...
The Top Twins are icons. They're fucking feminist icons of New Zealand. Yodeling twins who travel around New Zealand towing a caravan with tractors and have these amazing series of characters that they do. And... men and women, the Cairns, the Catmullet. It's a thing that, as I say it out loud, makes no sense to explain.
No, that's very much...
You're going to fucking love it, Grace.
Okay, a DVD is going to be brought to you and down on the stage, and you're going to love it. We'll watch it tomorrow as a birthday treat. Can I just have one last round of applause for our incredible guests? Woo! Mei Chen. Naa Atfai Naa. Thank you, Auckland. Good night. We love you.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Cal Wilson, and our very special guest, Mei Chen. Music was by Grace Petrie. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodger, and the producer was Tom Selinsky for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Michael Hayes, Bone Presents, and everyone at the Bruce Mason Centre. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
From Christchurch to Auckland, I was reading a very important feminist book called... Hello. The patriarchy set up this microphone. Here we go. I was reading a very important new feminist book called Hotbed.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.